Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened Radio Show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. We're going to skip the normal news wrap-up that we normally do at the top of our show. We're going to push that to later in the program, and instead we're going to go right to our very first guest. Deborah Jean Palfrey has become the central character in what has come to be known as the DC Madam story, and she was gracious enough to spend some time with us this morning. Deborah, thank you for joining the show.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, I know you're in a rush, and you're gonna have to leave us before the end of the hour to catch a plane flight. I can imagine you're just incredibly busy right now. But just to lead off, I'm sure you're probably aware of the fact that you're on the show today has just generated a huge amount of interest, and we were getting a lot of plugs from a lot of other websites, a lot of email, most of it positive, some of it a little bit negative, saying, "Come on, Michael, having the DC Madam is beneath your dignity," which is a silly statement because I have no dignity, and. But without compromising your legal position, what can you tell us about the current status of your case?
Well, we just finished our motions round yesterday. There's a procedure in place in the federal court. One side accuses, the government accuses, then we respond, then the government responds to that, and then we respond to their response. And all of that ended yesterday, and that took place over the last 30 or so days. We have some very, very strong motions. We have some very good arguments. We have another flurry of motions separate from this initial round, which should be going in next week and the week after. Total, maybe 10 to 12 to 15 motions. We believe any one of these motions, more or less, could and should kill this case, or at the very least, put it on life support.
Well, I know a lot of people are, you know, have very mixed feelings about the case, and a lot of people, I think, are cheering you on. I think any time you have the U.S. Congress getting up and screaming about prostitution, it just strikes a lot of people as being a little hypocritical. Maybe they're afraid of the competition. I don't know. But I want to get onto a point here right now because we're not talking about morality here. I'm the last person to make moral judgments on anybody. During my first marriage, I used to take my wife to wife swapping parties, and I got a motorcycle for her finally. But I think a lot of people are concerned that, as is in the case of Vitter and other names that are coming out, and I know a lot of people are hoping you will name names during this interview, we have political leaders who seem to think it's okay to live their life one way and then stand up and tell the rest of us, you must do this other thing, family values. I hate that phrase. Every time I think of family values, I think of dysfunctional first wife for sale, takeover payments.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I think what it's coming down to is the concern over the hypocrisy. And at this point, I mean, where are you coming from on the release of the phone records?
Well, that is the point. It is the hypocrisy. I released the phone records for two reasons. Because it became very apparent to me, because many, many, many people approached both my civil attorney, Mr. Montgomery Sibley, and me and said, look, you have a patriotic duty, for all intents and purposes, to release these records. We want to know who the hypocrites are. And even more importantly, and this is something that has not begun to gather a little steam, but a lot of people who may have used the service could have been compromised or blackmailed by who knows who, and therefore endangering the public's welfare. And this is something that you really might not think of at first glance or at first blush. You immediately go to the hypocrisy of the David Vitters of the world. However, if you think about it and you intellectualize it just a little bit, you begin to start to see the dangerous ramifications from an espionage perspective, and that is something that certain people will be honing in on these records for.
Well, absolutely, I agree, and I was going to bring that up a little bit later as we got into the interview, that when you have politicians who set one set of rules, or let me rephrase that, they live their life a certain way, but then they campaign and appeal to the voters by pretending to be something else, you immediately have that opening for blackmail and manipulation. And two incidents I can think of course, are the recent scandal involving the governor of New Jersey, and his lover, who was given a very powerful position in the state's Homeland Security Organization. And looking back during the Bill Clinton administration and the Whitewater investigation, it's in the Ken Starr report that somebody, was never really stated who, had succeeded in tape recording Bill Clinton's phone sex sessions with Monica Lewinsky and was using them to exert pressure on Bill Clinton to at least one end, which was to call off the FBI's hunt for Israel's top agent in the administration, codenamed MEGA. So you are absolutely correct that this strikes right at the heart of national security, and that in a way it is actually very legitimate to out these hypocrites. Because once you do that, they can no longer be blackmailed.
They can no longer be manipulated. That's right. No question about it. So you see, there was a great deal of thought that went into this. These records initially were thought to be of no value to me. And then when the government went, and they seem to have been of no value to the government either, because it's been widely reported, they walked by them in my basement countless times, on the way to my safe to pilfer it, to break into it. So, at first they were perceived as no value by anyone. But once the government put pressure on me after 5 months in the civil asset forfeiture phase, and they came after me and they said, we're going to indict you on RICO and racketeering and conspiracy and money laundering, and you're looking at years and years and years in a federal penitentiary, or you will plea out. I said, you go ahead and indict me. Well, at this point in time, the government attorney who I had appointed to me, federal public defender, a lovely man, Mr. A.J. Kramer, but he's a very busy, lovely man. He had no time to really defend me. I had no confidence in the man. So Mr. Sibley, my civil attorney, and I, he actually came up with the idea, and really should be credited for putting focus on these records, and said, look, the only thing, Gene, I can think of that we can do to raise the necessary money, and oh, by the way, the necessary money here is not $20,000 or $30,000 for a good criminal attorney, but $200,000 or $300,000, is to possibly sell those records. Well, we put them out there on the open market for a week or so. We immediately, after about a week or so, again, you have to intellectualize, you have to think about it for a little while, we realized this was not a smart idea. If these records got into the hands of one sole recipient and one unscrupulous sole recipient, we would all be in a lot of trouble. So we backed off of that. Then simultaneously to this, ABC, of course, we were well known in the media at this point in early March, ABC came to us and said, we know you have no money, but we will help you go through the records, thousands and thousands of dollars of research, and help you find exculpatory or helpful evidence for your defense. We gladly accepted their offer. The only thing they asked in return was that we give them exclusivity, the first interview, and that we give them all the records. Well, before we could get all the records to them, and they only received 2002 to 2006, the government came in and put an injunction on the records, because now all of a sudden the records are of great value to them. They're carrying on about how I'm intimidating witnesses and so on and so forth. Well, we went through all of that and all of that and all of that, and we finally got the injunction lifted on July 5th, which was last week, and that's when the records started to be released. So this has been an evolutionary process, but in this evolution, it has become very apparent to us that, no, they're no longer of any value because I don't need the money anymore. I have been appointed a very good attorney, private attorney, Preston Burton. He represented, of all people, Monica Lewinsky and Alder James and Hansen, Robert Hansen, the recent movie Breach, if you saw it. So I don't need it for that reason. And, you know, my case is pretty strong. It's probably not going to go to trial, but you never know. But the real reason I released these records was because of what we're talking about now, the possibility for espionage, the hypocrisy, and yes, how dare someone tell me what a family is, practices and acts one way and then does something entirely different.
Okay, and on that point, we have to take a break for our sponsors so we can make a little bit of money.
Alrighty.
Pay the bills. We'll be right back with Deborah Jean Palfrey, the D.C. Madam, after these words from our sponsors. This is the What Really Happened radio show. I'm your host, Mike Rivero. We'll be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And welcome back to our show. Our special guest is Deborah Jean Palfrey, a.k.a. the DC Madam. And, Deborah, just looking through my notes and emails, there is a rumor, probably unfounded, that the U.S. Postal Service is getting ready to issue a stamp commemorating you. It's a 41-cent stamp. Unless you lick it, then it costs $5. So, all right, the in-studio audience is not very appreciative of that one. Getting back to the seriousness of our subject here, a lot of the emails that I did get regarding the show, of course, everyone wants names. We've got the numbers, we're doing the research, but a lot of the numbers have been changed and reassigned, and so people are interested in names. We know about Vitter. There's been a lot of speculation and secondhand reports about Dick Cheney, either at Halliburton, and also something that shows up when you start looking through the numbers is how often your staff of professional attitude improvers was hired by places like embassies and consuls. It's almost, I hate to use what may seem like a negative term, but almost like party favors that are handed out as treats to court diplomats or business leaders. And how common is this in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, I think that's what people are going to get to the heart of eventually. I think I've put out a statement. It might be on my website somewhere. I've certainly sent it out saying that this is going to take months, if not years, to get to the heart of a lot of this. There's going to be some low-hanging fruit like David Vitter. That's for sure. But generally speaking, this is going to be a very hard road to go down. I think the first step is to get and encourage, and it's already happening right now, the techies and the geeks and the people that know how to, the data people, the specialists, the people who can retrieve intractable data, phone numbers, get them to work on putting together databases of in easily accessible format whereby you can type in a certain number and get a name, or you can type in a certain area code and get a name, or see how many times that person called or a certain time frame. Because you know, most of us, or at least I will speak for myself, I bet you I'm up to about the eighth grade level now in technology. I am not really that good at it. When I bought my first computer, I was so happy I didn't break it every time I turned it on and off. But I have moved beyond that. But most people are probably right in line with me here. So we're not techies. And, you know, you look at this massive amount of data, and some of it just doesn't even make sense. So what is needed first, and it's going to take weeks, if not a few months, maybe not, I don't know, to compile this information. And I would implore anyone in the audience, the listening audience, who has these capabilities, put together a site. Start to put together this information so that people can start to retrieve it. Because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that can't get past, you know, the amount of numbers, let alone, you know, just to get to certain numbers. So I think once people could get to those certain numbers, they could then factually identify, I know who Bill Smith is or Bob Smith or Joe Smith, and I understand why he was in town at that particular time. Have you noticed how I thought it was very interesting to see how the David Vitter situation has evolved here, because a lot of focus has been put on it and a lot of minds have been put on it. At first it was, you know, oh, my God, and the statement, and he went into hiding. And then somebody somewhere along the line got the idea of, okay, we found him. We found him five times. Now, what was he doing during those five times? And they went and they found out that three of those five times he was apparently in the House of Representatives doing the people's business while he was calling me and while I was calling him back to confirm appointments. So in order to even get to that point, to understand who these people really are, the significance of some of them, what they were really doing, and then the real investigation, you're going to have to get past this phase, this step one of getting this information and this data into a more accessible format for those people who have factual knowledge, who are really very good gumshoes and sleuths, to be able to take that basic number and go, I know who that is, and I understand exactly why they were in D.C. that week and what they were doing. That's what we need.
Just to let you know, Deborah, we've already begun converting the data from the scans of your phone records to text files that can be searched, and we're probably going to have a search engine of those records up on our website probably within the next 2 to 3 days, where people can go to our website, whatreallyhappened.com. There'll be a little box at the top where they can type in a phone number and see if it's on the list or not, or they can go through and they can do searches by various other parameters. And I'm not the only person who's working on this. I'm aware of at least one other website that has also succeeded in converting the records from optical scan to machine-readable format.
Is that DC phone list? People?
Yeah, that's the other one,
yeah.
And I'm excuse me, doing a slightly different version of it that will be operational within the next couple of days. So that step is actually being done, is almost completed, and we can move to the next phase where people are going to start looking at the individual numbers and finding out where they go, if they're still valid. And just so that you know, we have expunged your immediate family members off of the record,
so they're
not going to get hassled and harassed the rest of that. So I want to get back now to ABC, because a lot of people, there's been a lot of speculation over the fact that ABC got hold of your records and then went public and said, well, there's really no story here at all. And now looking back at the breaking story about Vitter and some of the other numbers that are beginning to come out of this data, it begins to look like ABC was really more interested in putting a lid on this than in really getting it out. And one of the speculations that's been making the rounds on the Internet is that some of the ABC top-level executives may have been on those lists as well. Can you comment on that?
Well, we'll all find out. You know, we're all going to find out pretty soon. That's all I can say. You know, I'm going to sit back just like everyone else and watch one revelation after another revelation come down the way. But, you know, ABC, as the old saying goes, done me wrong. They done me wrong.
Yeah.
They were going to put out a hard-hitting story. We trusted them. We were continually told to trust them. We were, I would say, babysat, hovered over, watched, constantly in contact with, every day, two, three. Either I was in contact with somebody or someone from ABC was, I should say, somebody from ABC was in touch with me, or they were in touch with my civil attorney, Mr. Sibley. They were scared to death we were going to give an interview before they got the piece to air, and they were scared to death that I was going to give some of the records, even though I think at that point there was the injunction in place. But they were scared to death that once the injunction was lifted, I would give the records to someone else. Because, again, they only received 2002 to 2006 and only 80% of those records before the injunction came down. So I remember sitting in New York with the senior executive producer for Brian Ross, the lead investigator, Mr. Sibley, and I having dinner in New York one night, and Mr. Sibley had to break the news to them that, you know, in all fairness, when the injunction was lifted, we thought perhaps we should start distributing these records to other places, and they were very upset.
Well, I can imagine. We have to take another break here for some commercials. We are with Deborah Jean Palfrey. If you'd like to join us, please call in 1-800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231, and we'll be right back.
This is the GCN Radio Network. Home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
Welcome back to our show. We're talking to Deborah Jean Palfrey, a.k.a. the DC Madam. And when we went to break, we were talking about how ABC had said, trust us, and then basically tried to spike the story of the content of the phone list. And Deborah, I think as you possibly get out into the world of alternative media, like the radio shows we carry here at GCN, or my website, whatreallyhappened.com, you will find numerous instances in which the mainstream media is more interested in hiding certain stories than in really getting them out, and instead we are deluged with Paris Hilton and various other assorted things like that. Now, I'm realize this is going to be your last segment with us because I know you have a plane flight to catch. So we've got a caller on the line. Ron from Dallas. Ron, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for taking my call. I want to ask Deborah two questions. The first question is, did you have any gay escorts?
No, this is strictly a heterosexual agency, all women staff for an all-male clientele base.
Okay. And secondly, I was wondering, do you personally have knowledge of any congressmen or senators or vice presidents or whatever that did call in and use your service, or were you kind of out of the loop on that?
Vice presidents, plural? I hear the rumors like you do. I do have some names, but I think it's the responsibility of others to come forward.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, Ron, thank you very much for the call. And that first question kind of struck me as odd, but I guess some people are curious about aspects of the operation, the professional attitude improvers, as I like to put them. Anyway, speaking of websites we were mentioning before, this might be a good opportunity for you to share with our listeners your website, where they should go to find more information.
Oh, you should go to DeborahJeanPalfrey.com. Deborah, the biblical version, JeanePalfrey. And if you can't remember that, just Google DC Madam or something to that effect, and up will come my name, and then just put a .com behind it.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and put a link to your website from my website at the conclusion of today's show, so people will be able to find it by visiting whatreallyhappened.com.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, this has been a tremendous, maybe tremendous is not the good word. This has been an experience for you, probably one you could have lived without. And as I said at the top of the show, I think a lot of people have very mixed feelings because on the one hand, technically there has been a violation of the law, but on the other hand, obviously, your services are something that our nation's leaders like to avail themselves on. And a lot of people are probably wondering, why is it then illegal? And is this, in fact, not really the heart of the hypocrisy where the politicians are choosing to do one thing in their private life and then stand up and make declarations about how we should all live moral lives? I notice, obviously, like in the state of Nevada, what you do is perfectly legal. And the girls are more protected and taken care of and have better access. They're not likely to get in trouble the way that some women in Washington, D.C., not yours specifically, but I think back to like Chandra Levy, get into trouble in Washington, D.C. So maybe it should be legal. And in that context, maybe the lawsuit against you is on the realm of harassment and frivolous, and certainly with your phone records, you have a way to exert pressure in the other direction for them to possibly reconsider what's been going on.
Well, first of all, let me say that, if my attorneys were here, and I have several of them at this point, they would immediately correct you by saying that this was not an illegal sexual service, it was a legal sexual service. I certainly do not want to go to prison, and I think in a recent pleading, in one of the motions that went out yesterday, the omnibus motion, I could be facing 55 years total aggregate in federal prison for these charges. These are heavy-duty charges, racketeering, conspiracy, so on and so forth. But I understand what you're talking about, prostitution and the senselessness of having prostitution a criminal act in this country. It's utterly ridiculous. But again, my defense is that they walked up to the line of illegality and stopped. With that said, yes, prostitution, if it were legal, none of this craziness and insanity would be going on for anyone right now, me included.
Well, I think any time the government presumes to legislate morality, you're entering into a very dangerous social instability there. We have two more callers that we'd like to fit
Absolutely.
In before you have to leave for your
sure.
flight. Paul from New York. Paul, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Deborah, I guess when you started this venture out, you never dreamed in your wildest imagination that someday you would be put on track to become a great American hero and patriot. And I just want to thank you for your courage.
Okay.
And we all know for years that the Bush crime gang and its sanctimonious quislings in Washington have been working overtime to spread the virulent disease of right-wing corruption and party patronage and crony criminality throughout all facets of the federal and state bureaucracy, from electioneering fraud, vote caging, intimidation of voter registration. Their tactics and the politicizing of the Justice Department and the radical right-wing agenda in this country has been something of a criminal nature of malfeasance on a horrifying scale that is unprecedented in American history. And the goal is obvious. It's no less than the commission of high treason by way of a furtive and sinister creeping overthrow of the most fundamental institutions of our society, whereby the entire system of governance has been subverted to a one-party Soviet style oligarchy. And I just thank God there are people like you out there willing to take them on, and Godspeed to you, and God bless you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much. How kind of you.
Okay, Paul, thank you. Go ahead and respond, Jean.
No, I was just going to say thank you very much, and it makes my, considering what Paul just said, and we all understand everything he's said, we've been living with it for years now, it makes my case look even more ridiculous.
It really does seem rather trivial. Real quick, we've got one more caller, Jack from Tennessee. Jack, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Thanks for having me on. So is it true that some of these numbers that are not listed anymore or have changed, will some of them just not be recoverable?
No. And I wanted to make that point a minute ago, and then my mind went somewhere else. No, we're hoping that people who have written to us who consider themselves to be specialists in the field of intractable data retrieval, is the way it's been put to us, will be able to retrieve a lot of that information, if not all of that information. We hope in time that every one of these phone calls will be traced back to someone, so that you will know who owned that number in 1994, and then the hunt begins on whether or not that person is significant or not. And if so, what was he doing at that time in Washington? So, no, we have high hopes. That's what I meant earlier when I said it could take months to really get down into this data and find out who all these numbers belong to. And I should also point out that there were 150 to 200,000 phone calls incoming and outgoing over the 13-year period. Only half of them, you all only have half of them right now. So let's say there was 150,000. You all only have access, more or less at the moment, to 75,000. Those are the outgoing calls. Those are the calls that I made from California back to the Washington, D.C. area. And because they were long distance, they were all documented. But the incoming phone calls came from Washington, D.C., and they only came in as a generic number. Now, we are hoping to be able to get into the databases of Verizon, which is the main phone company in the D.C. area, and go back all those years, for 13 years, and figure out who was calling me.
Okay, Jean, we have to take another break here. Can you stay with us till the other end of the commercials for a wrap-up?
Sure.
All right, thank you very much. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors. This is the What Really Happened radio show. We'll be right back.
Fear and hate will rule them, said the demon to his robe. In shackles we will bind them, to the terror they'll be shown.
And welcome back to our show. This is our final segment with Deborah Jean Palfrey. I know you have to run off and catch an airplane. We were talking about the data records, the phone records, and it strikes me that the real irony of the present situation and the potential embarrassment for Congress is that it is the USA Patriot Act and these various other security surveillance bills that have required phone companies to preserve these phone call records and phone number ownership records that are now really going to be the key to understanding exactly what was going on over the last several years. So I think that's definitely a case of hoisting with their own petard.
Yes, I would say so. You're absolutely correct.
Well, I've just put DeborahJeanPalfrey.com up on the top of WhatReallyHappened.com, so if people are unable to locate it directly through their browser, just go to my website, WhatReallyHappened.com. It is currently the top list in the set of main page links, so please go and visit. Do take a look at the phone records. Make copies. Share them around, because the more copies there are, the more difficult it is for people to play games with them. And that brings me back to an email I got from your lawyer just about the same time you were sending me my copy of the records. And you said that there was at least one altered set of the records that was being sent around the Internet. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, we were given a heads up that someone was going to pirate a copy and it wasn't going to be the original. And this was on Monday, if I'm not mistaken, of this past week. And we made the decision right then and there that this was really a situation that we could not control. And we had to make a choice, either let that pirated version go out there and hold back and not put out the original and just send out the original to certain people, or just go ahead and put it out there for everyone so that this doctored version would not be perceived, and it would have been perceived very quickly as the real deal. So we just made the decision right then and there, a preemptive move, and we put the original, the real list up on DeborahJeanPalfrey.com.
Well, I think that was the right move to make, and when you have information like this that can embarrass politicians, the sooner you get it out there, the sooner you're safe from possible preemptive repercussions on their eyes. Deborah Jean, thank you so much for taking time with us this morning. I know you have to run off and catch an airplane, so we're going to let you go here right now, and again, thank you very much for joining
us. Well, I thank you so much for your time as well.
And have a good day. Happy wings, happy flight, and we'll talk to you again sometime in the future. Good luck with your case. I hope the jury just throws the whole thing right out the door.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, that was Deborah Jean Palfrey, and I'm glad she had time to spend with us this morning. And thank you, listeners, for all the intelligent and kind calls that came in. We have a few minutes left this hour before we go to hour two of our show, and just a reminder that